You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works Volume 117A by Rudolf Steiner, a total of 13 lectures, entitled The Gospel of John and the Other Three Gospels, translated by Dr. Katrin Binder. The numbering is a little bit odd. This is, in fact, the last lecture. You could call it lecture number 13. Here in the book, it is labeled Lecture 11, given in Stockholm on the 15th of January, 1910. The Gospel of John is then not only an historic depiction of the event of Palestine, but also a description of the seven states of Christian initiation. Those who have gone through these do not need outer proofs for the historic event, for they know it already from the Akasha Chronicle. That is also the path from the historic to the mystical Christ. With the help of these records, it is no longer difficult for us to resolve the seeming contradictions in the Gospels. The men who wrote them described the events in Palestine according to what each of them already knew from their own initiation. For that reason, where the inner experiences are concerned, that gospel becomes most significant that was written by the man who was initiated by Christ himself. The other evangelists had been initiated into different mystery temples. When they saw the same great drama that had been depicted in the initiation temples, in an ideal way, taking place in the physical life as a real event on Golgotha, they knew that now the great initiator of mankind had come, and that they were now able to describe the drama of initiation and to apply it to Christ Jesus. They saw and understood different parts of his life, depending on to which part they turned their attention. But the initiation ceremony was not the same in the different temples. That is why they often rendered the same events in different ways and using different words. In this way, they have also rendered differently Jesus' last words from the cross. In Matthew and Mark, these are as follows: Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? Elohai, Elohai, lama sabachthani, my gods, why have you departed from my side? Why have you left me? With Matthew and Mark, these words are not really a formula of initiation in the true sense. When the initiate in the Egyptian or Pythagorean mysteries had been put into a coffin or stretched out onto a cross by hierophants, they lived in the spiritual world for 3.5 days. When they were raised again, everything they had experienced was clearly before their consciousness. It was a deeply moving moment for them when all these experiences rose from their inner being like tremendous living pictures. At that moment, words passed their lips, such as, "My God, how you have glorified me." In the Northern Mysteries, in which the initiate, in a certain sense, obliterated their own soul life and merged with the cosmos, a different expression escaped them. For example, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" The experiences they then had in the spiritual world gave them the answer to this question. These words are thus not an outcry of pain, but a repetition of the initiation ceremony and an expression of the overwhelming impressions that the initiate received in the spiritual world. The two initiations were meant to unite the extinguishing of one's own inner being, merging with the great cosmos, compressed itself into the words, my God, why have you forsaken me?" The answer was given by the spiritual world out there. That the evangelists rendered Jesus' words from the cross in different ways is due to their different initiations. The mystery of Golgotha was seen by them as an act in the drama of initiation, and each of them had turned their attention to words and expressions that corresponded to what they were used to seeing and hearing on this occasion. That is why Mark, who had been initiated in the Northern Mysteries, heard the words, my God, why have you forsaken me? While Luke, the therapist, who had developed in himself a great overcoming of the self as a tool for the healing powers of the cosmos, naturally had to hear different words. In the temples where the therapists were trained, it had been understood that the initiate's own inner being had first and foremost to be silenced, if the spiritual forces of the cosmos were to work through them, and the success of their work rested on this, their ability to forget themselves entirely, and to be only a tool for higher powers. That is why Luke heard from the cross the words, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Father, into your hands I put everything that is in me of an independent spirit. For these words were the words of an initiated therapist during the last act of the initiation, and which Luke was used to hearing. Overview of the forces of thinking, John. Overview of the forces of feeling, Luke. Development of the magic forces of the will, Mark. Harmony, Matthew. In the Christ, as the greatest initiate, a magical art of healing and wisdom were united, and for that reason each of the evangelists was able to put into his mouth the words they already knew from their own temple of initiation. John, as the one initiated by Christ himself, however, had looked deeper into his being than anyone else, and therefore also had a better understanding of his mission on earth. To understand Jesus' mission, we have to realize first the aim of our earth. What may be the true mission of the earth? Our earth is, as you know, a reincarnation of other planetary beings. The last moon catastrophe killed its being through a cyanogen compound, through hydrogen cyanide, which the people on the moon breathed. In a previous incarnation, it was moon, before that, sun, and before the sun period, it had been Saturn. If we look back to the last, to the moon period, we find no trace there at all of something we can call love, neither in the lower nor in the higher states of development. An inner attraction from one being to another, a spiritual love, did not exist on the moon, but the beings who lived there were driven by an unconscious, instinctive law toward working together. When a weight pushes down a scale, one does not speak of love. In the same way, we must not call this law that drove these beings toward each other love. But gradually, wisdom was planted during moon evolution, and therefore we find wisdom everywhere on our earth. During earth evolution, love is to be planted in the same way, so that during the next incarnation of the earth, love is to shine forth toward all beings, just as we now meet wisdom everywhere. This love that only worked on its lowest level as physical love during Lemurian times is to be made ever more perfect and spiritualized with earth evolution, so that during the next earth incarnation as Jupiter, everything is to be penetrated and illuminated by love, just as now it is all carried by wisdom. 600 years before Christ, humanity received the doctrine of love and compassion for the first time through Buddha. But if in our times some people are ready to fulfill this doctrine, then this is through the spiritual force that Christ has brought the human race. Let me prove this with an example. If we consider the Sistine Madonna, for example, we can call up the picture in our memory, we can understand it in part. But can we paint it? There is a big difference between understanding something and carrying it out. And just as it is greater to be able to paint the picture than simply to understand it, the force of love is more than just the doctrine of love and compassion. This force toward love and compassion had been poured into humanity by the Christ. But this could not take place without the mystery of Golgotha. The great mission of the Christ was to give human beings the first impulse toward love in a spiritual sense. And the disciple whom he had initiated himself was, of course, the next to understand and recognize this. Until then, only blood ties had united people. Now a spiritual tie was to be instituted that connected one soul with another just as intimately and profoundly as the blood tie between mother and son. In the words with which the Christ addressed his mother from the cross, "Mother, behold your son," and the disciple, "Behold your mother," he instituted an entirely new relationship between people. The entire future of earthly love speaks from the cross at that moment. This was the great brotherly love of mankind, the tie of universal brotherhood, that was instituted here as an ideal for the future development of the earth. It was a spiritual relationship between a mother in the spirit and a son in the spirit. And in the words that were spoken at that moment from the cross lies the entire future of love. These words had to be written down by John for human beings to understand the great impulse that the Christ had given. Jesus was unable to communicate everything to the disciples during his time. "I have much to tell you, but you cannot carry it now." But the Spirit was to reveal everything that lies in the seed that was buried in the earth, that grows from the night of death, and then everything that lies in the soul of human beings will be understood. Around the year 3101 before Christ, the ancient clairvoyance, as we already know, had begun to cease in individual people, and the spiritual world had become more and more unattainable for them. In the same measure as clairvoyance disappeared, the eye consciousness was developed, and at Jesus' time it had reached its full development. But Christ's message that the kingdom of heaven had come was necessary for it to be maintained. But the time of the Kali Yuga, the dark era of humanity, that began in the year 3101 before Christ, has ended with the year 1899. And in our new era we are approaching a different development. New soul forces are to be developed in human beings. And in the year 1932 to 1933, the moment will come when certain clairvoyant forces will occur, as it were, spontaneously, out of the depth of the soul in a great number of people. But for distress and confusion not to spread too much during this time, it will be necessary that there are leaders who can tell people what to do with these new forces. For only those who are spiritually prepared know what to look for. Only these people know and acknowledge the existence of a spiritual world. Through occult training, a person can even now receive spiritual eyes and can then see the spiritual being of the Christ in the astral atmosphere of the earth. For the words are true, "I am with you always, even unto the end of the world." But from a certain point in time, a huge number of people will be able to look into the spiritual world in a natural way. And if they are not instructed by spiritually prepared people, they can easily be pushed into madness with fear and terror, because they do not know and understand what they are seeing. If they are told, if they know that there is a spiritual world, they will be able to realize it and to create harmony. The spiritual appearance of the Christ will appear for the spiritual eyes in the astral sphere of the earth for a number of people. That is what is called the second coming of Christ. Just as the Christ once walked in a physical body on the earth and was seen there by a number of people with their physical eyes, he will be visible to everyone in the astral world in the next time period. This era will last for about 500 years, from 1899 to 2500. During this time, people will start to ascend to the spiritual world, where he is, and the eyes of all will be opened so that humanity in its entirety will understand and realize who the Christ is. But even now we have to start preparing people for this great moment, just as John the Baptist in those days was to prepare people for the arrival of the Christ on the earth, in the same way theosophy in our time has to help people to meet the times which are at hand. For the times are near where people are to have the strength to realize the kingdom of the Christ here on earth. If we take our mission in this spirit, then theosophy will spread evermore peace and tolerance in the world. And if the ability to see the Christ becomes more universal, other abilities will grow as well. Then the great helpers of the Christ will also gradually come forward again. First the great Buddha, who had been the first to spread the doctrine of compassion and love. After him will come the messengers of the Great Lodge, the 12 leaders of Earth evolution, who see in Christ the 13th and most noble around whom they congregate. Other teachers have gone before these to prepare people, and after them others will come to explain the great mission of the Christ clearly. People who in one incarnation have worshipped Buddha will understand in the following incarnation that Buddha had pointed to the Christ. What Buddha himself had said 600 years before Christ is not the same as what he has to say in our time. Each of these doctrines must say their bit about the Christ impulse. All religions have their roots, but all religions also have their development. And all have had the same message to humanity. Zarathustra, the Old Testament, the Chaldean-Egyptian documents, theosophy in our time. We must accept all these messengers of heaven so that the great doctrine of wisdom can develop in the most diverse way. The great initiates all agreed, because they knew that each had their contribution to make, and that all these contributions were to unite. Each rishi had his particular mission, but that which each of the 7 rishis proclaimed fused together into a single great message for humanity. But human beings have changed into disharmony what was meant to sound together in harmony. The sons of the gods had brought to human beings what each of them had to give. But among them were some who united with human egoism to disrupt the harmony. And in this way the disharmony became ever greater. This happened when the sons of the gods took a liking to the daughters of men. In other words, when divine wisdom descended to earth and united with human egoism. We have to approach the truth and develop ourselves through love. Not only our souls, but our different world views have to love each other. The Christ has given the impulse to the great brotherhood that is to unite all human beings and all religions. When human wisdom has been sacrificed for divine wisdom, we will retrieve the daughters of the gods, spiritual wisdom. Then the sons of men will rise to the daughters of the gods, and with this the other half of earth evolution will begin. The Christ impulse is the great unifying and harmonizing force that we have to allow to influence the life of our soul. We have to let this impulse influence not only our intellect but our feelings. And then we will feel the infinite warmth that flows toward us. We will sense how even the dead letter has the strength to transfer the impulse onto us that has poured out from Golgotha across the entire world to lead humanity ever higher. Through theosophy and spiritual science, human beings are to understand the Gospels better and better. And the deeper we penetrate into them, the more warmth will flow toward us from them. Not theory, but feeling is essential. But it is wasted love to preach if people do not receive wisdom through spiritual science. For without wisdom, nobody can come to love. Just as in the beginning of time the sons of the gods descended and united with the daughters of the earth, at the completion of time, the sons of men are to find the sons of the gods again and to rise to them. The ascent will appear as the second half of the mission of the earth. The Gospel of John has the power to transfer the impulse of the Christ immediately. The more we read the Gospel of John, the more we will be set alight with the fire in the Spirit of which Christ spoke. That is the end of Lecture 11 as it's numbered in the book. It is the end of the 13th lecture in total in the book and the end of the book. Collected Works, Volume 117A, entitled The Gospel of John and the Other Three Gospels, translated by Dr. Katrin Binder.